Well, we come back tonight to the life of Joseph, his journeys of ups and downs, his tragic circumstances of his life leading up to being 17 years of old and sold by your own brothers, his own brothers in slavery, and his journey, his rise to power at the age of 30 in Egypt to the second place of authority, next to Pharaoh himself, entry into his life again some 9 years or so later of his brothers who had sold him into slavery. Imagine what it was like on that day when Joseph was doing the work that he had been doing and going very successfully. And after 7 years of gathering grain, now this famine started just as God had told him and just as he told Pharaoh and just as his plan that he had given to the nation had been working out. It was going just like Joseph thought it would. He believed that God gave him that it would go that way. All of a sudden, into his life comes 10 men whom he recognizes immediately for who they are, his brothers, the 10 men who had allowed him to be sold into slavery, thinking perhaps they were going to kill him and they were even talking about it. But now, 20 to 25 years later, here he is on the throne of Egypt as these men come in and asked to purchase grain. We've been looking at this story really kind of in four parts. Tonight is number three. And I know it's been a while since we've been together and we've looked at this story. Our story tonight is from chapter 44, verse 1. We're going to start there and I'm going to read that chapter. So if you want to follow along, it's a long chapter, but it's got a lot in it. And I'm just going to read it. Hear the narrative. Hear the story. And see what we see and we feel from it tonight. Chapter 44, verse 1. Now Joseph gave these instructions to the steward of his house. Fill the men's sack with as much food as they can carry, and put each man's silver in the mouth of his sack. Then put my cup, the silver one, in the mouth of the youngest one's sack, along with the silver for his grain. And he did as Joseph said. As morning dawned, the men were sent on their way with their donkeys. They had not gone far from the city when Joseph said to his steward, "Go after these men at once, and when you catch up with them, say to them, 'Why have you repaid good with evil? Isn't this the cup my master drinks from and also uses for divination? This is a wicked thing you have done.' When he caught up with them, he repeated these words to them. But they said to him, 'Why does my Lord say such things? Far be it from your servants to do anything like that. We even brought back to you from the land of Canaan the silver we found inside the mouths of our sacks. So why would we steal silver or gold from your master's house? If any of your servants is found to have it, he will die, and the rest of us will become my Lord's slaves.' 'Very well, then,' he said, 'let it be as you say. Whoever is found to have it will become my slave. The rest of you will be free from blame.' Each of them quickly lowered his sack to the ground and opened it. Then the steward proceeded to search, beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. At this, they tore their clothes. Then they all loaded their donkeys and returned to the city. Joseph was still in the house when Judah and his brothers came in, and they threw themselves to the ground before him. Joseph said to them, 'What is this you have done? Don't you know that a man like me can find things out by divination?' 'What can we say to my Lord?' Judah replied. 'What can we say? How can we prove our innocence? God has uncovered your servant's guilt. We are now my Lord's slaves, we ourselves and the one who is found to have the cup.' But Joseph said, 'Far be it from me to do such a thing. Only the man who is found to have the cup will become my slave. The rest of you go back to your father in peace.' Then Judah went up to him and said, 'Please, my Lord, let your servant speak a word to my Lord. Do not be angry with your servant, though you are equal to Pharaoh himself. My Lord asked his servants, 'Do you have a father or a brother?' And he answered, "We have an aged father, and there is a young man born to him in his old age. His brother is dead, and he's the only one of his mother's sons left, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, 'Bring him down to me so I can see for myself.' And we said to my Lord, 'The boy cannot leave the father. If he leaves him, the father will die.' But you told your servants, 'Unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you will not see my face again.' When he went back to your servant, my father, we told him what my Lord had said. Then our father said, 'Go back and buy a little more food.' But we said, 'We cannot go down. Only if our youngest brother is with us will we go. We cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us.' Your servant, my father, said to him, 'You know that my wife bore me two sons. One of them went away from me. And I said, "He has surely been torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. If you take this one from me too, and harm comes to him, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in misery. So now if the boy is not with us when I go back to your servant, my father, and if my father, whose life is closely bound up with the boy's life, sees that the boy isn't there, he will die. Your servants will bring the gray head of our father down to the grave in sorrow. Your servant guaranteed the boy's safety to my father, and I said, "If I do not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all my life. Now then, please let your servant remain here as my Lord's slave in place of the boy, and let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come upon my father." What a story. Last time on the second trip to Egypt for food, Benjamin had been treated well by Joseph. He had been given five portions, Benjamin had. Imagine what it was like for the other brothers as they realized Benjamin's the youngest. He's probably a teenager. And Joseph treats him with such respect and honor. And the boys are absolutely astonished. Why would Joseph, or they don't know he's Joseph now, why would Pharaoh's assistant treat this family this way? There's so many things that this man has done that the brothers have to wonder, why? Why is he doing this? Why is it that our family is being treated this way? All this series of curious, unexplainable events. The brothers had to be very confused by these numerous things that they did not understand. They began to believe that it was God who was bringing this back on them. And it was because of what they had done to their brother Joseph that God was now bringing the punishment full circle to the place when they were in Egypt. So they were confused. They were afraid. They were squirming. They were sweating. And it was about to get worse. It was about to get more dangerous. You could even say bizarre for them. We'll start with Joseph tonight. The 11 sons of Jacob and his brothers come in to this Egyptian leader. To them, Joseph has to be this mysterious person, an enigma. You might even say in today's words, he seemed to be a psycho. They couldn't understand why he did what he did and accused them and manipulated them and all these things. They, of course, didn't understand all that he was doing, how controlling he was, but they knew that it was very unusual, and they could only attribute it to the hand of God. What do we know about Joseph? Number one we know about Joseph is that Joseph was a very intelligent man. Dan, would you go to that one? Thank you. I think I might have had my slides out of order. I'm not sure. But he was a very smart man. Joseph knew what he was doing. He had a plan. He had a scheme. And you see it throughout these four chapters in Genesis. Whatever Joseph was, he was a very intelligent man. He had ability. He had the ability to read the dreams that God had given him. He had the ability to control this whole project of food in Egypt, and the ability when his brothers came to lead them through this test that took a long time to do. He had to be a very intelligent man. We also know about Joseph that he was a Hebrew at heart. He was a descendant of Abraham, the fourth generation. There was Abraham, there was Isaac, there was Jacob, and now the 12 sons of Jacob. Four generations from Abraham. He would have known all about Abraham. I mean, he was a Hebrew. He would have known the history and the story about Abraham and his life and how God had called him from a place far away and led him. I'm sure the family stories would have been passed down. Abraham was his great-grandfather, and then Isaac was his grandfather, and Isaac would have told the stories as well. Joseph lived in the area of Isaac until he was taken into slavery. In fact, Isaac lived into the 30th year, as you put together the number of years of Isaac and Jacob and Joseph's life. And so it's not like Joseph was detached completely from this family. He had the stories. He had the knowledge. He knew who Abraham was. He knew the call of God. He knew who Isaac was. He knew the call of God. He knew who Jacob was. He knew the call of God. Because of that, he knew the stories. He knew the God of Abraham. And he wanted to serve the God of Abraham. He wanted to serve the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And we know about his life is that he was led by God. Several times in the story, we're told where God led him. God showed him something. God revealed to him. We're also told how God was with him. And even though it seems like he was completely forgotten, he was not. He was never forgotten by God. Always in the lowest times of his life, Joseph was there, but God was with him. His life was led by God. We also know that he was a man of many emotions, dealing with every emotion that you would expect. Led by God, and yet I'm sure uncertain about so many things. He was a man of many emotions. He was human, and he had to make decisions like everybody else about what he believed and how he was going to view the tragedies of his life, how he was going to view the difficulties of his life. And one of the great things about Joseph, example to us, and you can say it up until he was 30 years old, that, you know, his life didn't go very well. And he had a lot of unfair things done to him, but yet Joseph held on and believed in God. And he never lost that. A great example of a man who had faith in difficult circumstances. You might say, well, look what he got out of it. Yeah, God did reward him. But in part, God was able to use him because he kept his faith in the difficult times. What about you and I when we're challenged to believe in God? We're challenged to believe that God knows where we're at and He knows what we're thinking about or we're going through and dealing with. There's Joseph in the valley, in the dark valley, believing in God and holding on to his faith. Debbie and I listened to a song the other night, Gaither Channel, and that song about the same God that's in the valley is on the mountaintop. Same God that's on the mountain is in the valley, and how true that is. I love that song because it's true. God is the same God. He's the God of victories, and He's the God of defeats. He's the God of the good times, and He's God of the hard times. And Joseph is a man who dealt with that and went through that and lived through that. We know that he deeply loved and missed his father. The reason we say that is because of how close he was to his father. And it was a disadvantage in so many ways, and it was unfair that his father favored him, and it didn't help him any, and it wasn't good for him, and all those things, the coat of many collars. But then he'd been separated from that father that he loved so much for 20 years. And in this story, in the prior chapter, he asked the question, how is your aged father? Joseph asked the question. Is he still living? Joseph is thinking about his father. So when Judah begins to talk about the father, you can just see the stirring up of what is going on inside of Joseph's heart as well. Throughout this sequence also, I notice about Joseph is he never harms his brothers. Other than if you could say, well, he tried to scare him to death, and that's true. So he certainly deceived him, lied to him, led him along. So I'm not saying that they weren't harmed by it, but they weren't harmed by it in that he filled their sacks with food and he returned their silver to them. So when they went home, I mean, you don't see Joseph. He could have been so vengeful. He could have been so unfair to them. But even though he tested them and he carried on this ruse, if you would, he never harmed his family. He took care of them. He watched over them. He made sure that they had what they needed. In fact, I notice here it says that the instructions were, fill the men's sacks with as much food as they can carry. He was protecting his family. He was thinking about them. He had the advantage also or maybe it was a disadvantage, I'm not sure, of recognizing his brothers before they recognized him. God allowed it that it was Joseph who knew who the brothers were instead of the other way around. And because of that, God gave Joseph an opportunity to be a great example to us of dealing with pain, dealing with injustice, dealing with the need to forgive, all those things. Maybe God was testing Joseph too. We know that Joseph was testing his brothers, and I believe he was testing his brothers. God was testing him also. Here's this strange, demanding governor, but he's testing the brothers. What did they think? How can they imagine it? And so Joseph comes up with this, you might call it a clever plan. I read the whole story again in thinking about tonight, the many chapters. I think nobody could just write this story or make it up. It's just too strange. It had to be experienced. That's what I mean. What a plan. What a way for Joseph to dig underneath these brothers and pry at them and pull at them and prod them and draw out of them something that he seems like he's trying to do. What a plan. Now, Joseph gave these instructions to the steward of his house, fill the men's sack with as much food as they can carry and put each man's silver in the mouth of his sack. Then put my cup, the silver one, in the mouth of the youngest one's sack, along with the silver for the grain. And he did as Joseph said. I said once before, I just wonder about the servant, what he must have thought. Man, this guy, he's like a genius. He's this incredible, intelligent man that hears from God, and he's having me do these strange things to these poor people from up north. I mean, maybe that he fully knew. Maybe Joseph told him. It's possible about it, but it doesn't seem like it because later on he puts all his servants out when he reveals himself. It seems like he's holding that in completely. Now you wonder what a servant's thinking. I mean, up till now, everything Joseph has said has turned gold. You know, everything has just worked out perfect, but all of a sudden their master, the number two in Egypt, is telling them to do these strange things. You just wonder what they thought. And so Benjamin is the recipient of a false accusation with really no justifiable defense. I thought, boy, if I was trying to write a story and come up with a way to incriminate somebody without them really having any way to say, I'm not guilty, I didn't do it, this is a pretty good story. I mean, what could you say? I mean, they catch up with a group of people and they say, did one of you steal the cup of the king or of the Egyptian master, and of course all of them, no, we wouldn't do that. No, he's been so good to us, and he's given us all these things, and no, if any of us took it, we become your slaves. I mean, the person should die, but we wouldn't do that. See, I believe that Judah was saying something there about the character of his brothers. He said, no, that's not who we are. I don't know. He might say, well, it used to be we were that way, but that's not the way we would. That's not the way we would treat our the master. No, if anybody in our group took it, they should die. And we should become the slaves. But no, that's not going to happen. Imagine as the servant says, okay, well, we'll check your sacks. And all of them climb down from their donkeys and they're looking at each other. And man, what is this? This is the weirdest thing. What in the world? So they take the firstborn sack, it says. They start with the oldest. That's Reuben. Now, I'll talk about Reuben in a few minutes, but they take a sack down, and Reuben, you didn't take anything, did you, from the house? No, I wouldn't do that. And they open it up. Oh, and Reuben kind of, well, I know I didn't. You know, and then you had Simeon, and then you had Levi, and then you had Judah, and then I don't remember the order of the rest of them. That, you know, all 10 of them, well, no, there's no sack. That's fine. Okay, look at Benjamin's. We know he didn't. He's just a little boy. He wouldn't do something like that and open it, and there it is. I mean, what could Benjamin say? I didn't do it. Somebody put it in there. Yeah. And so what do the brothers think? The brothers, of course, are stricken in their heart, perhaps believing that their sin 20 years ago is now being punished on this day. And they seem to beg for mercy. Joseph accuses them, and he calls them to answer. Why have you done this? Again, what do you say about Joseph? He hasn't harmed him, but he scared him to death. So who is it that speaks up? It's not Reuben. It's not Simeon. It's not Levi. It's the firstborn. It's Judah who speaks up. Verse 16. What can we say to my Lord? Judah replied. What can we say? He says it twice. What can we say to my Lord? Judah replied. What can we say? How can we prove our innocence? There's no way. God has uncovered your servant's guilt. Wow. Like Judah has made, to me, I think of this, Judah has made a confession here. God has done what's right here. God has uncovered your servant's guilt. We are now my Lord's slaves. We ourselves and the one who was found to have the cup. Judah says there's no defense. There's just no defense for what has been done. Then Judah went up to him and said, please, my Lord. Again, it's Judah that speaks. Now we think about who's Judah. Certainly we think of Judah in the future. We think of the Lion of the tribe of Judah. We think of the descendants of Judah leading up to the Messiah, and how Judah's line is the one chosen by God to bring the Messiah into the world. Think about that. Why? Was it random that God chose Judah? No. It was Judah's descendants that God chose. Maybe this is why. Maybe there's something in this story, in these verses, that especially connected to or got the attention of God. Why Judah? Something about Judah. Well, let me talk for a moment about Judah's character. First of all, we really have a couple of stories about Judah prior to this. When Joseph was taken by his brothers and put into the pit, then the brothers wanted to kill him, but it was Judah who really kept Joseph from being killed. It was Judah that spoke up and said, we can't take his blood. We can't do that. Instead, sell him. You might think, oh, well, he was just wanting to sell his brother. No, actually, it was Judah that kept him from being killed. Something protective about Judah. Another story, which isn't very good, is about he left his family. It's unique that Judah's the only one mentioned that left the family of Isaac. I mean, left the family of Jacob for a time. He moved out. He married a Canaanite wife. They had children. They had sons. And it led to a very immoral story that Judah was, as we look at and think about, was responsible for. Certainly in the area of not doing what was considered to be right at that time. If your son died, then you're to have your next son to marry the widow to have children. And Judah failed to do that. And then there was also the prostitute that he came to say these words, she is more righteous than I. I don't know at what point and what time there was a change in Judah's character. We know that now he's back with the family. And he seems to be the leader of the family. Fourthborn son, but he's back and he emerges as the leader of the brothers. Why? Why Judah? What about Judah? Well, first thing we notice, or I notice, is Reuben was the oldest, and he led the first trip. The first trip down, it was Reuben that did the talking. It was Reuben that did the negotiating. It was Reuben that kind of led everything. He was the oldest brother. And of course, we don't know because it doesn't tell us, but we read between the lines that when they went back home, and the second time, when it was time to go back to Egypt, and it's Reuben that says, Father, hold me responsible, but we're going to go down to Egypt in the prior chapter, and we will bring bring back the grain. And Jacob says, No, Reuben, you will not do this. And so they wait longer, and finally the famine becomes more intense. And when the famine becomes more intense, it's now Jacob who speaks up to the father, to Jacob, and he pleads with Jacob to let them go. And he says, I will be responsible. Judah does. So Reuben, for whatever reason, is no longer the leader of that generation. And then you have Simeon and Levi, and a prior story that we didn't look at is about them and how they brought reproach upon Jacob and the family because of Dinah, one of their sisters. And so you have Reuben that's kind of out of the picture, and then you have Simeon and Levi who have been, it would seem from the context, to be stripped of any leadership in the family because of their prior character. And so now you have Judah, the fourth son, who becomes the leader of the family at this point. And God uses and chooses Judah in order to bring Joseph and to bring Benjamin and to reconcile this family. Judah, perhaps it's because of what Judah did here that there was the ability for this family to reconcile. I notice in this story that if Judah would not have done what he done, I don't know what would have happened. I don't know what the next chapter would have been for Joseph. Who knows? You know? But it's because Judah stepped up and Judah did what he did, that it gave the opportunity for there to be forgiveness, there to be reconciliation, there to be a path for this family to come back together again. Sometimes when families go through hard times, and most of us have families, most of us have situations that are difficult over time. Many of us do. Sometimes those situations seem to get worse and worse and worse, and sometimes they get resolved. And when I think about these patriarchal families and stories, I'm just reminded of how important it is that all of us, when we have issues in our families, that we realize that God can use us to help to bring people back together too. Look at this story. Look at this story and the role of Judah in this case. And so Judah passionately pleads for Benjamin. And he just jumps up, kind of as you would. He's kneeling down before Joseph, not knowing who he is. And according to verse 18, it says, then Joseph went up to him and said, Please, my Lord, let your servant speak a word to my Lord. Do not be angry with your servant, though you are equal to Pharaoh yourself. And then he goes into the story. He says to Joseph, my Lord, here again, let me tell you what's happened. Let me tell you the story. And he approaches him with humility. He bows down before him. He says, please hear my words. Don't be angry with me. Please. He has a humble approach. And then he has a bold plea. Well, right before this, what's Joseph doing? Well, Joseph is continuing the ruse, and he's playing the part really well. Somebody has stolen my cup. I can't believe, after all I've done for you, and somebody has stolen my cup. Whoever it is will pay. So, he says, the rest of you are free to go, but the one who stole the cup stays. He knew what he was doing. He knew. He knew what to do to get to the heart of challenging these brothers and to Judah. The rest of you are free to go. Verse 17, this tear is kind of manipulation. Far be it from me to do such a thing. Only the man who is found to have the cup will become my slave. He knew he had it. He had Joseph, he had Benjamin. So here's Judah. He jumps up. A bold story. I also notice what Judah does is Judah talks about his father, how much he loves his father. Judah talks about his loyalty to his dad and how he's made this promise to his father. How important Benjamin is to his father. And he says there was another brother, but he's gone. And father says, father believes that he's torn to pieces. He says, I can't do this to my father. Don't ask me to do this to my father. Finally, Judah asks to take Benjamin's place. When it seems like there's just nothing else, Judah just says to Joseph, please, let me take his place. Listen to the words. They're pretty beautiful, I think. Now then, please, let your servant remain here as my Lord's slave in place of the boy, and let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come upon my father. And Judah does what finally pushes Joseph over the edge. Joseph cannot. He can't hold on to it anymore. What does Joseph do? The floodgates are opened. Joseph knows the heart of Judah. He sees something, and we read between the lines of everything Judah said, but Joseph sees that it's different. He sees the grief and the remorse, I believe, of the brothers, at least of different things that are said. They have acknowledged what they did was wrong. It was wrong. And Judah has this heart for Benjamin and this heart for his dad, this heart for his father, that Joseph finally, he comes to the end of his ability to continue this. And so verse 45 says, or chapter 45, these words, then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. So there was no one with Joseph. He made himself known to his brothers, and he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and the Pharaoh's house heard about it. So loudly. Wow. What emotion. What trauma. What all this 20 years have been building up in Joseph. Just imagine what that was like. And it all came out. We'll pick up from here next time.